Herman Hooksma Reappraised, Part 1, an editorial by Reverend Kenneth Cole. A most interesting article. Herman Hooksma was right on the three points that really mattered. Surprising, even. Noteworthy because of who wrote it. Not, as one might expect, a Protestant Reformed theologian reiterating that H. Hooksma was right back in 1924, and that the Christian Reformed Synod got it wrong. Nothing newsworthy there. This is an article written by Dr. John Bolt, professor of systematic theology in Calvin Seminary, no less. Not exactly an institution that has been known as a source of articles siding with Herman Hooksma on various controversial issues. Certainly not when it comes to the issue of common grace and the decisions associated with the Synod of the CRC, 1924. But here is such an article. It is not that Dr. Bolt merely sides with Hooksma on various important issues in that controversy, beginning with a criticism of the Synod's well-known three points, but really in this article Bolt exonerates Hooksma when it comes to various key decisions made by the broader assemblies involved in that case, both by the 1924 Synod itself and then shortly thereafter by Classis, Grand Rapids East, in prosecuting Hooksma and subsequently expelling him and his consistory from the CRC. That is, the article exonerates Hooksma, and by implication his colleagues, the Reverends Danhoff and Uphoff, with him, if Bolt's main proposition and his arguments stand as stated. We are persuaded they do. In the main, those who read the article will have to judge for themselves. As an aside, we must admit we find it rather curious where the article is found, namely in a book entitled Biblical Interpretation and Doctrinal Formulation in the Reformed Tradition. This book is a collection of essays submitted to honor Dr. James DeYoung, who happens to be a former president of Calvin Seminary. As Dr. DeYoung comes to the end of a career as a teacher, scholar, and administrator, his friends and colleagues decided to publish this book in honor of his years of service. So this collection of 14 essays. Why Dr. Bolt and the editors thought an article entitled Herman Hooksma Was Right appropriate in their honoring Dr. DeYoung. In fact, the essay with which to conclude the book, Chapter 14, we can only speculate. Perhaps something for DeYoung to ruminate upon in his years of retirement. We cannot imagine that it will add much sweetness to such ruminations. More likely, the title of this book of essays, Biblical Interpretation and Doctrinal Formulation in the Reformed Tradition, explains, at least in part, why Bolt's article was deemed appropriate to be included, namely that the controversy in which Hooksma played such a lead role in 1924 revolved about the teaching of common grace and the CRC's doctrinal formulation of it. And that, in turn, raises this question. Were the infamous three points of common grace as formulated by the Synod of Kalamazoo, 1924, really of the Reformed tradition, historically and confessionally? Dr. Bolt's conclusion is they were not. In the essay, he gives his reasons. That Bolt is not content to let the issue become a sleeping dog in CRC circles, but is willing to confront his colleagues and others with errors made and wrongs done, as he judges matters at this point, takes no little courage. We commend him for it. To the two editors, Dr. A. C. Letter and Dr. R. A. Muller, who were willing, by the inclusion of this article, to confront their colleagues and the reading public with the issues raised by Dr. Bolt, we also express our appreciation. In their preface to the essays, the editor's opening comments on Bolt's article are worth noting. We read, "Looking back on our past with honesty is not always an easy matter, particularly when so much that passes for history is written with a view either to the justification or the condemnation of a particular cherished point of view." John Bolt's penetratingly honest essay concludes the volume with a new look into one of the most contentious moments in the history of the Christian Reformed Church, namely, the adoption of the three points of common grace by Synod Kalamazoo in 1924. After presenting the rather blunt initial gambit that Hoeksma was right, Bolt lays out both a significant case for the problematic nature of the 3 points on both confessional and ecclesiological grounds. End of reading. The editors have more to say, also worth reading, but the above quote is sufficient to give the flavor of their estimation of Bolt's bold essay. Describing Bolt's article as penetratingly honest is an honest assessment indeed. A quote also serves to give a good synopsis of Bolt's essay. It has to do with the problematic nature of the 3 points on both confessional and ecclesiological grounds. To avoid confusion, one must not strictly identify the title of Bolt's essay, The 3 points That Really Matter, with the 3 points of common grace drawn up by the Synod of Kalamazoo. Kalamazoo's formulation of the 3 points of common grace is only one of the 3 points addressed by Bolt. Bolt lays out 3 areas in which he argues Hoeksma was right and the Synod of 1924 wrong. The first has to do with the doctrine of common grace itself, that is, the Synod's formulation of it, the confessional issue. Bolt's 2nd and 3rd points relate, in the main, to the area of the ecclesiastical procedures. In an introductory paragraph, Bolt informs us that he intends to defend the following proposition. We read this. In this essay, I want to defend the following proposition. With respect to the issues and controversies surrounding the common grace controversy generated by the decisions of the CRC's Kalamazoo Synod of 1924 and its aftermath, including the suspension of the Reverend Herman Hoeksma by Classis Grand Rapids East, on the 3 fundamental issues, that grace is particular, that the doctrine of common grace is an extra-confessional matter on which Reformed people can have different opinions, and that Reformed church polity was violated in hierarchical actions, Herman Hoeksma was right and the Christian Reformed Church was wrong, pages 296 and 297. End of reading. So one basic proposition, essentially as stated in the essay's title, but divided into 3 fundamental issues as outlined above, 3 issues on which Bolt judges Hoeksma's, 3 issues on which Bolt judges Hoeksma to be right and his own denomination to have been in error. To get the 3 issues clearly before us, we restate them. Number 1, that grace is particular. Number 2, that the doctrine of common grace is an extra-confessional matter on which Reformed people can have different opinions. Number 3, that Reformed church polity was violated in hierarchical actions. It is our intention to give a brief summary of Dr. Bolt's arguments in each of these areas, and then assess his contentions. At the outset, we must state, regrettably, that we cannot agree completely with Dr. Bolt's assessments on all points. For instance, we read the 2nd issue referred to above, which is that the doctrine of common grace is an extra-confessional matter on which Reformed people can have different opinions. Many of our readers will understand why we would question whether, in the end, this was really Hoeksma's perspective. Though, that said, we can understand why, in reading the 1924 history, one might judge the statement as worded to be Hoeksma's view. This is not to say that there is not much of which Dr. Bolt writes with which we are in basic agreement. There is. And even if we find that we cannot at this point be in full agreement with Bolt on all his conclusions, we must appreciate his attempt to set the record straight on these issues. We take our cue in offering a critique of Bolt's conclusions from a footnote found in the essay itself. While Bolt formulates his title in decisive and dogmatic language, Hoeksma was right, the footnote makes clear that he casts it in this language to some extent for its shock value, that is, to catch the reader's attention and then force one to consider his arguments, and then prompt a reply. As Bolt states, this brief essay is suggestive rather than definitive. On a number of issues, such as the historical record concerning the relation between covenant and election in the Reformed tradition, further analysis is required. My reformulations of the 3 points of Kalamazoo, it barely needs mentioning, are those of one person and not of the Christian Reformed Church. My only goal in this essay is to argue that such further study is both an academic and an ecclesiastical application. So, Brother Bolt has come to certain conclusions to which his honest reading of the history of 1924 and its writings has led him at this point. Conclusions certain not to be so very popular in his own circles, but conclusions that he wants his colleagues to reconsider, ponder, and then respond to. Bolt's essay, as the editors indicated, is an opening gambit, a move in a chess game, meant to initiate response. We are sure, therefore, that Dr. Bolt will not object to having his suggestive conclusions critiqued by a Protestant Reformed writer or two. As Bolt's article makes plain, he has not only thoroughly researched the original source material, visiting the Calvin College archives to study the minutes of the broader assemblies involved, together with the multitude of supplements serving as background material, but he has familiarized himself, as well, with the perspective of Protestant Reformed authors who have written on this history with its numerous issues. Quotes lifted from books such as For Thy Truth's Sake and A Watered Garden, along with quotes lifted from Hooksma's own writings on the history with its issues, are scattered through Bolt's essay. Bolt's concluding words in the above-mentioned quote are striking. Notice he speaks of an ecclesiastical obligation for his academic and theological colleagues of the CRC. Bolt is bold, indeed, in the interest of truth and righteousness. As we see it, what Dr. Bolt's essay implies is that what many in the Reformed Church world would just as soon dismiss and consign to the backwaters of ecclesiastical controversy and church history. A smallish, provincial controversy that took place in an insulated West Michigan Dutch community on certain side issues back in 1924 was anything but that. And this history with its issues needs to be reappraised by thinking theologians. Issues were dealt with back then that will loom large today, issues that need to be carefully thought through once again. Common grace, exactly because it touches one's view of particular grace, which lies at the heart of the gospel, as any man who has a heart for what is apostolic and reformed ought to understand, and then as well has everything to do with one's world and life view, simply is not some small backwater issue. The CRC, where she is today in comparison with 90 years ago, should be living proof of that. And it is not an issue that is going to go away. Kuyper's Common Grace is being translated for wider distribution to an English-speaking world. A whole new generation of budding theologians and preachers is being introduced to Kuyper's stimulating writings on this doctrine. A theologian of stature, with this theory so attractive to young, energetic, let's change the world, impressionable minds. What took place in Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids in 1924 and 1925, and what was at stake, remains as relevant for today's ecclesiastical scene as 90 years ago. Dr. Bolt's essay in its own way reminds us of that, and so warrants some response to the SB. In the SB. The SB, after all, found its origins in this controversy and the closing of various doors to Hooksma and his colleagues due to their opposition to the 3 points. But before we conclude this article, we take time to recommend the book in which Bolt's essay is found. Dr. Bolt's essay, of course, is what caught our eye, but it is not the only essay of value in the collection. Included are essays from writers such as Drs. R. Muller and R. Blacketeer, well-known theological writers with significant things to say. And there is a most significant little essay submitted by Dr. Lyle Bierma entitled Beza's Two Confessions as a Source of the Heidelberg Catechism. Theodore Beza, mind you, the same Beza who is charged by so many with being the father of the scholastic branch of Reformed theology, the modifier corrupter of Calvin's true and pure, not so rationalistic, Calvinism. To think that two catechisms written by Beza should have, as Bierma rather convincingly demonstrates, a significant influence on Ursinus and Olivianus, and a catechism they drew up, our Heidelberg. Talk about a surprise to many. Why do we find this so interesting? It raises the possibility, does it not, that others who, like Beza, have been marginalized by theologians given to the scholastic, rationalistic brand of Calvinism, may not be so far removed from the mainstream of Reformed Calvinism after all. Food for thought. To be continued.